You're listening to this podcast, so we know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact you might not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average.
They make it super simple. Pop over to progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote with coverage options tailored to your choices. Plus, you'll see which discounts you may qualify for, like the online quote discount or savings for paying in full. In fact, 99% of Progressive auto customers earn at least one discount.
See if you could save when you switch to Progressive. You'll feel good about making a savvy choice. Visit progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little extra cash back.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who save with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary.
I love days like these at the pool, but my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can sometimes take me out of the moment. I'm ready to make a splash with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi, Risankizumab Riza. Skyrizi is a prescription-only injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. At 4 months, most people saw 90% clearer skin when measured from head to toe, and many were even 100% plaque-free. People also saw significant improvement in psoriasis symptoms of pain, redness, itching, and burning.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
Now there's nothing on my skin, thanks to Skyrizi, and that means everything. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
Astonishing Legends Network.
The views and opinions expressed by hosts and listeners on the Astonishing Dead Letter Office are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of Astonishing Legends Productions, the Astonishing Legends Network, or any affiliated entities or guests.
When something unexplainable happens to you, it can make you feel isolated or alone. But trust us, you're not. For over a decade, you've been sending your strange stories to Astonishing Legends. And now it's time for our fellow legenders to hear them too. Join us weekly in Blanket Fortiana as we dig through your intriguing messages to the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
Tonight's episode, A Finger Down the Spine.
So there's a peninsula in northern Michigan. I didn't know this was there until we got this letter. Mm. It was interesting to look this up on Google Maps, my favorite thing, or Google Earth. It's only about 3 miles wide, and it runs 19 miles straight out into Grand Traverse Bay. But this peninsula goes out far enough that it splits the bay into two arms. It's Old Mission Peninsula. Peninsula Drive has cherry orchards, 10 or 11 vineyards now, and a little white lighthouse at the very tip that sits right about on the 45th parallel, halfway between the equator and the North Pole. And people honeymoon there. If you look it up online, it looks stunning, just gorgeous country.
Well, I just heard Neil deGrasse Tyson remind us what honeymoon means. Do you know what that means? Is that?
No, I don't, actually.
This is what he said during the month of June. The moon often appears to have an amber color to it, the color of honey. A lot of folks get married in June, therefore they go on a honeymoon.
Oh, very nice.
Well, apparently this place, it's one of those rare places where the postcards undersell it. It's quite spectacular. And just what you described there as far as the layout, the geography is unusual and special in a way. But here's the thing about a stretch of land that's been beautiful and a little out of the way for 150 years at least. The old houses on it have had a long time to collect stories, especially those big summer homes.
Yes. Well, there is one in particular at the heart of tonight's dead letter. It grew up out of an 1860s farmstead. Mm. Then a wealthy couple from Chicago rebuilt it in the 1920s as their summer place. Years later, it became a restaurant, well, two restaurants, really, under one roof and one staff, fine dining in the front, And then in the back, there's a pub where the working part of the property used to
be. Uh-huh. And the staff all end up telling a version of the same story.
Every one of them going back decades, a name comes up. The owner's wife. The locals call her Genevieve, and depending on who's telling it, she's playful, or she's lonely, or she's something a good deal less friendly than that.
There's a lot of interesting things you dug up as well about the veracity of some parts of the story.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, but tonight we're going to start off by talking about the letter that comes from a man who sat on this story for years. And he first left it on our voicemail for a Halloween show a while back. And then he finally decided to write it down and send that in. But this is why we do the DLO, so we can get to all those folks' stories, so your efforts were not in vain.
Yeah, we've got a lot of great stories.
Yeah, and your experiences will be shared, because that's one thing that I take a lot of enjoyment and satisfaction in that people who have other weird things happen to them now know, like, well, I'm not the only one, and I worked here.
That's
and,
right.
And you don't have to be alone anymore. But when that's it comes down to this story, our author here was 19 the summer it happened. And he was home from his freshman year of college, working as a dishwasher and busboy for fast cash, good summer job, and absolutely certain that none of this ghost business was real. But as we often say, the ghosts don't always care if you think they're real or not. They're just there. It's like you don't care.
That's right.
Why would you care if they believed in you? You know you're real, probably.
That's right.
So, yeah. Scott, I believe it's your turn to read tonight.
I actually left a voicemail with this story for one of your Halloween episodes a few years ago, but I thought I'd write in a letter to share in the hopes of being utilized for the Dead Letter Office. In the summer of 1994, I was on summer break after my freshman year of college and went to live with my parents and older sister in Traverse City, Michigan. My folks had just moved there to a waterfront home on Old Mission Peninsula. It's one of the most beautiful areas in the world and a major tourist destination now. My sister is 4 years older and had a good waitstaff job at a restaurant just up the road from our new family home. I was looking for summer work, and the restaurant needed busboys and dishwashers. I wanted fast cash and low stress. It had a great culture and a beautiful location on the water. I started in early June and had only worked a couple of shifts when something strange happened. It changed the way I see the world around us. The location was actually two restaurants. The front half was fine dining, overlooking a body of water known as Bowers Harbor. Most nights, it offered a beautiful sunset-soaked restaurant experience. On the backside of that restaurant was a pub type of restaurant. They had the same ownership and some crossover staff. The building was once a lumber baron's home. I believe it was built in the 1920s. The fine dining restaurant was in the old home. The bar type restaurant was in the back, where I believe it was once a servant's area, barn, and stables. Both restaurants were very popular. The history surrounding it is somewhat documented, but also full of local legends and tales. Most refer to a ghost, Genevieve, the Baron's wife, who apparently roams the halls and rooms of the very large structure. Apparently, when the two of them passed away, he left his estate to a nurse that cared for them. There is speculation that there was some sort of love triangle that fuels the rumors of an angry ghost, which I found to be very comical. As you can imagine, being a restaurant, there have been a lot of people coming and going over the years. It's still operating today under different names, but has been in operation since the 50s. Many people have had a variety of strange stories that they tell. My sister has some of the best that she personally experienced. The creepiest one, the one that she still talks about, happened in the bar restaurant as she was closing. As she was going through her normal routine, which included blowing out all the candles on about 30 tables, she walked in the kitchen to punch out. Within seconds, she returned to the restaurant area to walk out the front door. She found all of the candles had been relit. Those types of odd circumstances led many of the staff to joke about Genevieve. I was a young, arrogant college student studying important things. I certainly didn't believe in anything paranormal until my experience. I had only worked a handful of shifts as a busboy and dishwasher before Genevieve, or something, interacted with me. One night, after cleaning the dishes, I went to change my clothes. This had become my short-lived routine because my clothes would get pretty gross cleaning dishes. I would use an upstairs storage room that offered some privacy. It mainly housed extra tables and chairs that were stacked along the walls. It was a little dank, but I only needed seconds to change clothes. I'll never forget that it was a warm night, and my clothes were especially dirty that night. I walked into the storage room, which was formerly the nurse's bedroom. I firmly closed the old door behind me, I flipped on the light switch, and the bulb popped. I thought nothing of it. An old bulb had finally given up. Quite common in the pre-LED age. It also didn't bother me because it was a bright moonlit night and the room's giant window shed plenty of light. So I walked over to the window area, at the far end of the room, and proceeded to unpack my bag of clean clothes. I was fully naked as I bent over to put on a clean pair of boxers. As I did, I felt the cold touch of a finger run from the top of my neck down my spine to my waistline. I did not freeze, I jumped. I cannot explain to you how fast I turned around. I spun around several times looking for what just touched me. I didn't see a thing, but my heart was racing. As I took my first deep breath, I suddenly felt a presence in the room. It was foreboding, and it filled me with dread. I have never been so scared in my life. I ran out of the room topless and left some of my clothes behind. I did not put in my 2 weeks' notice. I never returned for another shift. My sister was not happy with me because she'd helped me get that job, but I didn't tell her why I quit. I was too embarrassed and naive. When I explained that story to her many years later, she understood. We were not the only ones that were uncomfortable in the presence of whatever that was. It was common. It felt malevolent. I can honestly say that whatever was in that room, it did not have good intentions. It felt invasive and aggressive. I don't know if it was the nurse, Genevieve, or some other entity, but I can still feel its cold touch. The universe is full of the unknown. I'm no longer so arrogant to believe that we know it all. Thanks for reading, and thanks for producing all of the Astonishing Legends Network shows. I am forever a fan.
Something strange is going on in Blanket Fortiana tonight. We'll return in moments.
You're listening to this podcast, so we know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact you might not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average.
They make it super simple. Pop over to progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote with coverage options tailored to your choices. Plus, you'll see which discounts you may qualify for, like the online quote discount or savings for paying in full. In fact, 99% of Progressive auto customers earn at least one discount.
See if you could save when you switch to Progressive. You'll feel good about making a savvy choice. Visit progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little extra cash back.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary.
Hey guys, it's Joe.
It's Kevin.
And this is Nick Jonas from Hey Jonas.
Do you remember growing up when it felt like every teacher had a favorite student?
Everybody knew who it was. Well, I was homeschooled, so I like to think it was me.
A class of one. Congratulations.
But we're not here to talk about favorite students. We want to talk about a teacher's real favorite.
Kleenex tissues.
According to TeacherList, Kleenex is the number one facial tissue brand trusted by teachers.
Kleenex Ultra Soft tissues are silky soft to help prevent skin irritation. And now you can take them anywhere with Kleenex Snap and Go.
Between dance, soccer, school events, and everything else kids have going on after school, Kleenex Snap and Go is easy to take along. It fits in backpacks, sports bags, or even in the car, so it's ready for whatever comes next. So do the best thing for your kids and teachers. Stock up on the ultimate classroom favorite. Maybe you'll even become the teacher's favorite parent.
We still haven't settled who would be the favorite in our school.
We haven't settled who the favorite brother is either.
For whatever happens next, grab Kleenex.
Back to tonight's Dead Letter.
Excellent reading, my friend, and I love this story. Well, I love most stories where it happens to somebody who just didn't believe in this kind of stuff and wasn't expecting this. And as you said, or we did in the beginning, it doesn't care if you believe in it. It's going to happen to you. But I think people are more shook if they definitely believe in their soul that this is not possible, and then it becomes possible and it happens.
Right.
And you have to deal with it. And most folks, there's a version of sticking your heads under the covers of just quitting the job, which I also love those kind of jobs where like, yeah, we can't keep anybody here for more than a few weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
Just kind of nobody wants to work here.
The other thing about this one is that it has one of my favorite kind of haunting details, which is the one that seemed to defy our understanding of how time works linearly with the candles. Like having them be all blown out, and then you come back and 30 candles are relit instantaneously. Like, that's a time-consuming process. Everyone knows that. Lighting a candle is time-consuming.
If you're going around...
It never lights as fast as you want it to.
Yeah, with an extended lighter and trying to light each one and to get it going.
Right. So what does that say? I always wonder what that means. Does that mean that she thought they were blown out or that they presented to her in a sensory way as being blown out and they weren't really, and now she's just seeing that she never blew them out in the first place, or that she imagined that she blew them out but she didn't, or time froze or somebody skipped through time and lit them all?
Yeah.
Or did they just spontaneously light instantaneously, and that's some kind of power that something from the other side has? I always wonder, like, how is this happening? Because it's physically and temporally impossible.
To our point of view, but we have a very limited observational port onto reality. And then I've come to believe in the last few years that our reality is just a mere shadow and one version of it seen through a lens that we're supposed to. It's how we've developed as human beings. So we can experience this world as we were meant to, but also to keep striving to see beyond it. And what I mean by that is that you are meant to be experiencing life in this way, in this timeline, and to experience time as we do, because that's the story and the game that we are going to play here and hopefully learn from. But beyond that, our worlds or planes or states of existence that don't follow these rules. And so you bring up a very interesting point, which I also thought about as soon as I had read that and you reread it, in that how does the mechanics of that work? Well, fire seems to be an important element no matter where you are. At least it's one of the four big ones here on Earth in this time period.
Right.
And so control over that is something spirit seems to enjoy. Fire, air, moving air, you know, chilling the air when you're in a room. Maybe that's just a byproduct of them being here. But manipulation of fire in all the elements is something apparently they enjoy if they can manage to have enough energy to do it. So this is interesting to me because where else has fire and burning come to play? Well, a lot of those stories, the one we always mention, it was a season one of Paranormal Witness, episode three, where something was lighting wads of toilet paper on fire in that poor woman's house with her daughter and her daughter's friend. I think we just talked about this a few DLOs ago.
Yes, yeah.
That seems to be a very powerful entity who can not only apport things, but start fires and just create a really bad mojo for the folks there and mess with them, which they, whatever it is, seems to enjoy that. And then, of course, the Sally House. And before you take a shot, I want you to actually do a mixed drink this time. Take a moment and mix yourself a drink. Later on, I'll be enjoying a gin and tonic, properly chilled.
Enjoy responsibly if you're of age.
Exactly. But there we had things that when they got aported, even out of the house into another house, seemed to burn or melt. Little fires seemed to spontaneously combust.
Yeah.
And also, I think with wads of toilet paper, it's like, well, that's an easy thing to burn. It didn't burn down the house. I think it was a demonstration of power and a off-color practical joke of sorts, because it gets you to panic and then to marvel at how that happened. But to your point here, I would guess that all the candles spontaneously ignited or reignited. So I don't think so.
Okay, that's your theory on that. Okay.
It's a chore that had to be performed at the end of every shift. She's done this hundreds of times, I'm guessing.
Right.
And so...
And then, by the way, we're also in the trickster realm here.
Yeah, there's...
Like, aha, you thought you did this, but I undid it.
Well, it's... Right, it's a bit of a tricksterish, but also, pay attention to me. I'm here. I want attention. And also, I have control over fire.
Yeah.
Look, these aren't those joke birthday candles, which we all had. Remember, you blew them out, but there's a... an element of a fuse.
Remember, I use them every year.
Do you still
do
that?
It's not like a long ago memory for me.
Well, here's what gave away the gag when I was a kid. Like, oh, these are going to be so awesome. We're going to get...
they kind of sparkle.
Yeah.
we're
going to get Uncle Woody to try to blow these out, and then they're going to light back up. But once you light them, they'll spark, right? Sometimes they'll...
Yeah, they're kind of like Wile E. Coyote dynamite fuses. They sort of... Yeah.
It's not like that. These are normal candles. But there is something also about candles in two respects. One... I've heard of psychic mediums who purport to help misguided souls see the light. And I remember talking to our friend Jim Hunt, who we did an episode with a long while back. And I said, well, how do you guide wandering spirits who want to get to the light and they just can't find it? He says, it can be any light. He says, it could be the fire, the fireplace. He says, I often use beeswax candles and I'll light three and, you know, try to get them to go into that light. He says, really, it's about the intention and the ceremony of it and the process.
Right.
But he said, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be the light beaming from heaven through the tunnel. It can be any kind of light source, according to him. So again, I can't see what he sees, but I have a handful of stories that I've collected just from people I know that involve candles too. One was, this either happened to a very close friend of mine I've known for decades, who lived in a haunted Hollywood apartment building, Fleur de Lis, or it's got a French name to it. You would know because it's on Hollywood Boulevard. Okay. I think you drive by it all the time. And she said, her neighbor of hers had a little dog, which would never go into the laundry room. It would follow her all the way down and then just kind of sit at the frame of the door and kind of lowly growl while she did laundry. And she said, oh, yeah, that place definitely had some spirit activity going on in it. But she remembers she had one of those bedside candles, I believe, the one with the three wicks, like the really wide candles. I don't think she even lit them that night, but she woke up and somehow the candles had all melted down as if they burned continuously for 24 hours or even longer. So you have two things going on there. Somehow the candles lit themselves or didn't light themselves, but something melted the wax and it was faster than it would have been if she just lit the candles themselves and let them go all night, you know, like an 8 hour session. Somehow there was a pool of just melted wax in this tray. And so she was freaked out, of course. It's like, well, how did those burn all the way down? I would have woken up or they'd still be going this morning.
Right.
Because a candle doesn't burn that fast. Also, what you notice is that I think if you leave the candle continuously burning, eventually they'll kind of snuff themselves out with too much melted wax where it liquefies. Yeah. They don't burn evenly, usually.
A couple of quick things I'll tell you. First of all, this building in an area that you and I know well, and for people that forgive us that aren't familiar with Hollywood or whatever, but just to tell you, Forrest, where it is.
Yeah.
Because, hey, it's our show. We get to talk about what
that's true.
It's basically between Hollywood and Franklin.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
Extension of Franklin. And it's on Whitley Avenue. It's almost like halfway between Highland and Cahuenga. Mm-hmm. It's essentially about a block behind Musso and Frank.
Oh, of course.
So
yes.
That's where it is. And also, when I looked at it a minute ago, it said it had a prominent role in L.A. Confidential.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
So pretty interesting. And it's a cool looking building. So if people want to look that up, look up the Fleur-de-Lis, 1825 Whitley Avenue in Hollywood. There's another mansion in Holmby Hills also called Fleur-de-Lis. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about this apartment building.
Yeah. So as we were saying at the opening, this is a great story for how a ghost, a resident ghost or a series of events gets labeled and the start of an astonishing legend. And as we were just talking about in our last episode, you know, there's a lot of times when you do research into a series of events that the locals have given a name to or it's just kind of known in the region. And then you dig in and then you find that whatever reason, you know, the name is sticking or has tracked, but
in our experience, there's a difference between a name handed to you as an experiencer out of the ether in some way that you can't even pin down or even subconsciously, and a name or an idea that comes to you through local folklore.
That's right. And the difference is because a lot of the time the folklore connection to a series of paranormal events, actually it couldn't be more wrong, or let me say not connected in a way that you assumed. I don't want to say wrong because, like I said, when we dig into these things, you know, it's what they say about every conspiracy theory, every legend, even stuff wholly made up out of whole cloth, is that there's a kernel in there that is true or somehow connected to something else. And when it comes to paranormal events, it just is not fitting the story or the legend as most folks know it. It takes on a life of its own.
Right.
It winds up just being a convenient package for whatever series of paranormal events that are going on. And to be clear, this has no bearing on, you know, whether or not something paranormal is happening or not, because I think it just, these things just kind of happen. In their own logic or things that don't make sense to us, but they do happen. This is literally just about how the living are trying to frame it and share stories about it, which is why we got into this business. And it's a,
that's right.
It's a practice as old as humanity.
And folklore is the background of how stories get handed down orally. And a lot of times that's the reason we have any connection at all to historical events that might otherwise have been forgotten, especially if they're not political or in a larger way, part of, right, you know, the circumstances of an area or whatever else has happened. There's small stories sometimes that you wouldn't know about unless there was something fascinating about them. But on the other hand, we have no more business saying what a paranormal thing is than we do using Dr. Google or AI to diagnose our own medical issues, yeah, which I think a lot of people.
Yeah, don't do that.
You can't do it with the paranormal either. So that's what
it's saying. Undefinable and does not fit neatly into a round hole. It's the square peg into the round hole. You could try and jam it in there and it's not going to be satisfactory and literally doesn't fit. So in this, right, case, John, just a few shifts in to his dishwashing business, he doesn't believe in any of this stuff. And Genevieve is already the house answer for anything that's happening that's odd in the building that can't be explained. She's the container, right? Because that's how, right, it's hard for us to think of bundled spirits or, you know, sludge entities and sparkies, which is like, yes, a cloud mass that has sparks going over all of it. That's how some mediums see lower forms in the spirit world. Well, most, yeah, of us don't know that stuff, and we're not that, yeah, great at it either. But you want to just,
yeah,
point to one thing. Oh, there's Genevieve again. She's up to her old tricks. And sometimes there was another hotel, I think, or motel, where I think the character, the resident ghost, was George, who people thought was a former owner. And he would do things like turn off the TV if it was too loud. If you fell asleep to it, you'd wake up and somebody would turn the TV off. So he was still working there. So that has more context that we can understand. But what's going on here? You know, what is this legend that's been handed to him in his first week? Basically, it's the same thing as like, this is how the dishwasher works, or,
yeah,
this is where we store this or that or the
right,
grill pads.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out this story about Genevieve doesn't bear up to scrutiny, apparently, at least as far as I can tell. There's actually a local historian, Julie Choperet, who spent years on the former owners of this property, the Stickneys. Hmm. And the woman that everybody calls Genevieve or Genevieve almost certainly never went by that name. She was actually known as Jenny.
Mm-hmm.
Genevieve shows up in exactly one place, according to Julie, her death certificate, signed by a doctor who didn't even know her.
Right. So the question is she a ghost or is this ghost going by a name the living woman never used? But like I said, there, when you pointed out that way, it's like, okay, maybe he didn't know her, but was it correct in some way? Was it just a name she didn't go by? But Jenny certainly sounds connected to Genevieve or Genevieve. Yeah.
Yeah, it's short for it, but it's not like, it wasn't her given name, I guess, out in the real world, according to Choperet, I guess. Hmm. But if you spend any amount of time doing genealogical research, you find out pretty quick that whenever someone responsible for recording your name when you enter the country or you're in a census or you have the details of your death recorded, people do, you know, you go with the formal name, yeah, or they misspell it or they make something up or they misunderstand it and don't bother to correct, right, it. They just write down whatever they thought you said, you know, at Ellis Island, all this stuff happens, yeah, everywhere. But that's how that gets recorded. But the crux of this is that Genevieve, who is this, the idea of this ghost, is not really even what that particular woman that it's ascribed to went by. She went by Jenny. So that was,
right,
that's just something to know there at the outset.
No, and that's a curious thing. You know, we always say that there's power in a name, and yeah, that's what exorcists do. They want to know the name of the spirit or demonic entity that they're dealing with, because then your intention and your energy as a human is directed towards them. And so,
right,
that's important. And it's like it goes back to ancient Egypt, where your mother gave you, you have your real name that your mother knows, but you go by a public name. And the reason,
right,
is that the bad spirits can't identify you properly.
Right.
So you're given two names. You have a secret real name, but a public name that you go by often. So that's fascinating. But there are other things about the name. I had a Danish uncle by marriage, and he came over. His grandfather, I believe, or father, came through Ellis Island. And, of course, you have a guy recording it who's probably Irish, or he's just not Danish. And he tried to explain his name. And he goes, your name is Nelson. That's it.
Right.
The only thing I know is that if you're from a Danish background, it's usually N-E-L-S-E-N. And if you're Swedish, it's S-O-N.
Yes.
But yeah, that's the stories that like, ah, he couldn't have time to fuss with the real data. You're just Nelson. He's like, okay, that's fine. He just went
right,
with it.
Right.
The hospital misspelled my middle name two or three times.
Oh, okay. There
so
you go.
There, yeah. Case and it's just like, I think my dad actually got it wrong because it was a surname, old family surname that my grandfather suggested. And so they're not really sure about the spelling anyway. So it's like, okay, well, it right. doesn't matter.
Right. There you go.
You know yeah. who I am. Anyway, so the version that John got, which is basically what the restaurant still has on its own website, is that Jenny was a jealous wife. Her husband was having an affair with a live-in nurse. He left his fortune to the nurse, and Jenny hanged herself in the elevator shaft over it. But Jenny didn't die in that building at all. She died in Grand Rapids, 200 miles away, in 1947, while she was in her 80s and passed of heart disease and diabetes.
Right. So you might ask, is there a true thread under all this? There's usually one real thing, as Forrest said a few minutes ago, that the rest of the story gets braided onto.
Right.
So what was the thread here?
Well, the money. And the money yes. makes the world go around, either the spirit world or the real one. That we know of. The husband did leave his wealth to the widowed nurse and her kids. That part is true as far as we know. And the couple didn't have any heirs. And by the careful accounts, he did it out of gratitude for years of care. Now that, as you and I know, when you do the care, it's a really hard job. And for that yes. many years going on, I'm so grateful and wowed that people take that on as their real job. Like, you do this every day.
Yeah.
So I think yeah. it's easier. We don't have that as much emotional connection, but yeah, God bless them. But somebody took the ordinary estate decision and, invented a suicide that never really happened and an affair that nobody can document to the real story here. And then of course you put in a vengeful ghost, which ties it all together, and it makes for a great story, and that's what it is.
Right. But if you actually want a name for whoever might be in there, the record and the research points elsewhere before it points at Jenny. This place, the restaurants that are there, grew up out of an 1860s farmhouse, and three of the Hartsons, H-A-R-T-S-O-N-S, the family that built it, actually died in that house, and parts of their original house are still standing inside the current building. And most people have never heard the Hartson name, which is a little bit of a tell when it comes to all this, how this stuff evolves. Now, Chester and Anna Hartson started that farm in the 1860s. It was a working old mission orchard, the same kind that's apparently still all over the peninsula. It's a tradition. That's why it's called Old Mission Peninsula.
Interesting. You know, and it stayed theirs for more than 40 years. So Jenny Stickney didn't buy it until 1909. So the land was already a generation deep in Hartson history, family history, before a Stickney person ever set foot on it. So, Scott, you said that three of them died there in the house, right?
Yes.
And that would be, yes. So I've got Chester, Anna, and Nita.
Right.
When it was that original farmhouse. And this, again, yes. is all before the Stickney family arrived. And that comes directly straight out of Chopra's research.
Yes, it does. But I dug a little bit further. And from what I could find, Chester was Nita's dad. Her mom was Betsy Ann Hartson. So I'm thinking that's Anna. Mm. When Julie says Chester, Anna, and Nita, I think Betsy Ann was probably Anna. Now, Betsy Ann died of heart disease, like Jenny Stickney eventually would 50 years later. But Betsy Ann died in February of 1898. Chester passed just 20 days or so after Betsy Ann, and their daughter, Nita, died just 7 years later in 1905. Mm. She was only 45 when she passed, but I couldn't find a cause of death.
Right, but did you find out what Chester died of?
Well, I found his death certificate. It's online, but it's pretty blurry, but I can make out the first word, and it's either the word senile or senility, which is an outdated term for pretty much any kind of cognitive decline back then.
Yeah, and we're talking dementia or Alzheimer's or Lewy body dementia.
Or even less version, you know, or just basic memory loss. It could have been a lot of different things.
Right. So basically, what I think a lot of folks don't realize is that those conditions will shorten your life, but actually you can die from them if they're that severe, because of course your body functions are controlled by your brain. And when that shuts down, the organs aren't working right. So that could be a cause of death. So we don't really have the makings of a dramatic death leading to a ghost story now that is going to survive through the ages.
Right. Not as far as I can see anyway. But Nita did have two siblings also, Ida and William. And I could have spent hours flushing all that out. And we're lucky that I didn't, because this is a dead letter office, and that seemed like a bit much. But the bottom line is, spectacular murder, suicide, jilted lover deaths aside, the Hartsons lived lifetimes in that house. And I'm talking about the individuals, not multiple generations. And honestly, to me, though, that's what gets a soul ensconced in a place. It doesn't explain, though, the malevolent feeling that John had when he crossed paths with whatever he crossed paths with in that room.
That's right. And so it's all a bit murky, I think, even to gifted psychic mediums, about what's really going on there. Because, again, from our experiences in Atchison, I think it could be a mishmash of things going on and various defined entities coming through there, and you really don't know what it is. Yeah. And it could be because I'd like to think that the kindly doctor's wife, the elderly lady, passed away in her 80s, is not going around spreading malevolence or just has that kind of vitriol in her, that it's going to be that dark of a feeling. I certainly think there's some very bad people when they pass and they stick around. Yeah, they're perhaps they were that way in life because they were tormented or had some kind of spirit oppression that was of a very malevolent nature. But who knows? You're making assumptions here. But I'd like to think that there's something else going on here that you just don't know about. And so, yeah, it doesn't explain that. Also, like I said, some things that don't really line up for me, like when you say, oh, somebody hanged themselves in the elevator shaft. It's like, okay, an elevator in a house, you know, there's cables that go up to
that's
receptacle
a lot of trouble.
Shed.
You're going to have to go to a lot of
attach the
there.
Rope. Yeah. It's like, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It's just easier to hang yourself from a...
It's very dramatic.
Well, elevator shafts are scary. You know, people falling down into them, that's much more likely. But then why didn't she just jump into the shaft if it was but then how do you work that out? Because the elevator is not supposed to be, I guess you could force the door open if the elevator was at the bottom and you're on the top floor and you just jump, or you could just jump out the window. You know what I'm saying? That part seems a little overly dramatic. There's another thing that reminds me, there's always somebody who ends their own life through shame or anger or whatever. Same thing. There's also a story from Waverly, the sanatorium, where a nurse, and this is the legend of lore that's hard to define there, where a young nurse got pregnant out of wedlock with a doctor.
Oh, right.
She was ashamed. A doctor just kind of ignored her. So she hung herself in room 503, I believe. And so that's the legend around that room. But I think nobody could ever find legend of or documentation of a nurse taking their own life at the sanatorium.
Right.
It's just very murky, but it's a good story. And what people do know is that for some reason, that room 503 does have a lot more activity than other places in the facility.
That's what this is about. That's what this dead letter is about. And what we're talking about right now, it's knowing what's behind what's happening.
And it's a big place. So you had a lot of people coming through there. This is a much smaller converted restaurant
from
a home. Waverly's a lot of place, a lot of souls passing through there. And so it has a collection of resident spirits. There's a guy with a dog. They've, you know, again, legends pour up around that, where he was a homeless veteran with his dog, and you'll see the dog and the guy, and there's a guy in a white coat, and then there's the black mass, and then there's the shadow being, and it's just, that was a cornucopia of various entities here, but we should be able to narrow this down, I would think, a little bit more. But getting back to this story, you know, with all due respect to the research that Julie Chaperet did, one thing that does connect our listener is the building itself. So when the farmhouse caught fire in 1927, the Stickneys, they didn't tear it down. Jenny had her nephew build the new house around the shell of the old one. And that's also pretty common. I had relatives. There was an old residential house that started off as an elder care house, I believe. And they kept that, and they built a new facility around that, I think like in the 60s or something, around the original old house. So it's kind of weird looking. There's an old Victorian-style house in the center of it. that they didn't tear down. They just built a new facility around that.
Hey, if you've got a sound structure, like why spend the money tearing it down and building it again? You know, like make it part of where you're about to do.
So that just sounds like it tracks, as they say. And whatever's left of the place the Hartsons actually lived and died in is just folded into the same structure where young John went upstairs to change out of his dishwashing clothes. And then as the story goes, you know, this is all a good example of why there's so much more to the paranormal and our experiences than simply just debunking a folkloric tale connected to unexplained events. And we just talked about this, about the Conjuring House. People will say like, well, you know, that woman, she probably wasn't a witch and she didn't actually hang herself in that house. But you'll find, like I said, there's always some kind of weird connected kernel. Like, no, but she did die a few houses away. And so, like, who are you to say, like, well, it can't be her? It's like, well, you don't really know. Yeah, you're just going by whatever record you can find. Like I said, records that have been passed down. Anything you read in the paper, even today, is to be researched further and take that at surface value. And I always say, look at it with a maybe. And so, you know, does that mean the ghosts don't exist or that nothing is going on there? Well, I don't think so. Obviously, people have experienced quite a bit there continuously and consistently. And a lot of people have lived and died at this place.
Yeah. And that's the layer I find most interesting in this whole thing. The workplace folklore. You can actually call this occupational folklore.
Wait, did you make that up? Example. I like that.
No, it came up in the research and I was like, I think this is like, if I get a chance to go back to school, I want to take folklore.
Oh,
I
would love
to study. I wish I had done it the first time around. They teach it at University of North Carolina here in Chapel Hill. So I was like, oh, that would be fun to do. But I think this is a real thing, occupational folklore. And this is a clean example of a named ghost outliving everyone who ever worked there. Restaurants turn their entire staff over every few years. That building's been a restaurant under a different name since the 50s. So Genevieve rode through all of that, passed down shift to shift, like a recipe for the house
dressing.
Ooh, that
sounds delicious. I wish we were enjoying wedge salads. Yeah, right now.
Well, you know, I did see my son, who is a huge World Cup fan, was telling me that some country they were the TSA had to make an announcement to get visitors who had come for games to stop packing ranch dressing.
Yes, I saw that.
Take back.
I did see that on
from.
The news, and it's the same story wherever you go on the world.
They're like, what is this magical sauce?
Well, listen, you know, we look to Europe as a lot of great things that they have over there that we're blown away by. And if you've ever had European friends come to visit, they are often blown away by mundane things that we have here. I go to Europe, you know, this early 2000s, I take a trip to Europe and, you know, my friend in Germany is like, well, this is where the first Christmas tree was. It's like, really? That's awesome. Because, it's, you know, they just hung golden potatoes from it. It's like, what? Like, well, that's what they had, you know? So they painted potatoes gold and hung those. And that's the Christmas tree in, at Freiburg. But like you're blown away. Or there's a McDonald's, talk about things being converted to restaurants. There was one section of the town square, I think built in the late 1500s, that is now a McDonald's. But the only thing they do in Europe is whatever business it is has to match the tone and style of the building, the historical part of the building, is that you can't have something outlandish. It has to be understated.
Yes.
Which we don't do here.
Yeah.
But they come here, and I remember taking some European friends down Lincoln Boulevard in Santa Monica, and they're like, oh, this is wonderful. It's like, it's a bunch of muffler shops. Like, what do you... It's like, no, the food is great. And, you know, we took them to Aunt Kizzy's and the soul food there.
That's like a Sedona. Everything, it's like the McDonald's in Sedona has a turquoise
that's right.
sign.
Yeah, so it has to be in the vein. But, like, they come here, and they're wowed by it. And... thank goodness they take that home with them, along with the ranch dressing. But they're just blown away. It's like, it's pretty good, but it is kind of like everything. And then you go to Italy and they're dunking their fries in mayonnaise, which some people like. Yeah, it's so like, I never had a bad French fry in Italy at all, or Germany. So there you go. But, whatever is going on at this house, whether it's some kind of folkloric tulpa named Genevieve, or members of the Hartson family, this is cold contact from behind, and, you know, where a hand or a finger goes down the spine. And, you know, my dad used to joke around with me where you've done this trick where you take the tip of your finger and you go down the spine quickly and it tingles. You get a woo.
Yeah.
Let's, you know, try it with your son. It's just it's a funny joke kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it gives you a fun chill. I thought that that's what this was, because that's kind of an old gag,
right?
You know, that my grandfather and father would do, especially to the youngins, to get a reaction out of them. But this is one of the most commonly reported physical sensations in the whole paranormal genre, is the cold touch.
Yes.
And sometimes it turns up in old hag accounts, haunted house reports. Also, Greyfriars. Remember, that's one of my favorite anecdotes, is the girl who was there taking the tour and felt her ankle get grabbed. And then she gets home and there's like handprints, like a shadow.
Yeah.
But he's not reporting a one-off cold spot or just one incident. He's reporting a finger that starts at the top of his neck and runs down to his waistline in a line with a direction and seeming purpose, with some sense that there was something in that room that knew he was there and was messing with him. And this is my point, is that also it does it when you're most vulnerable. Okay. It's always the bedroom. It's always, or it could be the bathroom, or when you're naked and getting dressed. I mean, that's the comical part, is this thing waited for him to get undressed. Like, whoops, how about this? It probably had a laugh, a chuckle. Why does it do this? Well, like I said, why did my dad and grandfather do that? Because it all made us chuckle. I thought it was funny, and it gives you a shiver. And it's just kind of
like a Babinski.
Yeah. But the thing is, I turned around and I could see my dad was doing it. And then he was laughing, just messing with his dad's do. When you turn around and there's nothing there, but there's every other sensation, you know what I'm saying, of a feeling, a presence there. Hearing something, of feeling something, and you turn around and whatever's there is invisible, that just flicks the switch.
Yes.
And whatever this thing was, it had intention.
Right. I think the physical explanation here for John is stronger than what's at the base of a lot of these encounters that freak people out. And it accounts for everything except that one detail that made 19-year-old John quit without notice and never go back in there. That's more than a draft that suddenly learned how to point. That's like, or a bead of sweat. The part worth keeping out of all this is that one thing he kept coming back to was it seemed aware of him, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And so once you set aside Genevieve, Genevieve, and a drafty room and all that, to me, this story actually takes on a much more poignant point of view from a paranormal standpoint. Mm-hmm. It's like, let's cast aside all the lore that brings the diners in for, you know, dinner at Halloween or whatever.
Right.
That doesn't mean there isn't something freaky going on here.
Well,
it's different from what you think. It doesn't want to be packaged and put on postcards and websites.
Right.
It's something else. And then my next thing is, you know, I didn't look at all into, there's no way to know anything about the Hartsons. We know they lived there. We know they died there. They ran an orchard there. They could have been great people. They could have been not great people.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah.
We could, I mean, people are all different. Some people are good. Some are bad. Whatever. We all know that. So there, you know, is there a possibility that maybe someone who passed in that family was messing with him? Maybe it was just a practical joker, and maybe, you know, it felt malevolent to him, but it wasn't. It just came off that way.
Yeah, no, the experience is impossible. That shouldn't be felt or happening. And even stories you hear, you kind of pass off. So that's a good point, is that all that taken together in a very unexpected and to the experiencer impossible, and then the impossible happens. Does that change your tone of like, whoa, this is bad? Well, maybe.
Yeah.
Also, but I would go further in that sometimes it's like what I talked about, the old past hotel owner, George, like he's got a good friendly feeling. Like nobody's really scared of him. Like, oh, that's George. He's like, oh, he's flicking the lights. I better check that. Like, yep, this bulb's going out, or the bulb went out. Like he's still working there. You know, it's his place. He built it. So he's just keeping an eye on it. And nobody feels, the other part of it is that you might get freaked out, and because ghosts don't exist. And now you've experienced something ghostly, and that's bad. And you're understandably traumatized.
Yeah.
So I don't fault anybody for that. Or you look at it as like, oh, that's just George, or that's kind of weird, but like, well, that's kind of fun and interesting. And I don't get a bad feeling from George at all. I mean, you wish he wouldn't be there while you're showering, okay? It's like, I'm just here to check the water pressure. Like, don't mind me.
Yeah.
I don't, George, alive or dead, I don't, just get out of here for the moment. There's two ways I think that businesses, as we've known throughout our showbiz here, is that you either embrace it or you don't really talk about it. And when you go to have dinner, do you really want to know this place is haunted or like there's creepy stuff going on here? Enjoy. Does that do any wonders to your appetite, or do you seek that out? Because the restaurant I mentioned, the converted old doctor's house, it's not on their menu. They had a whole page that I'd read about the history of the doctor, and it sounded kind of kindly. You know, he was a great guy, apparently, did a lot for the community, had the big house, and so they kept it there to honor him. And when he passed, they let's just keep the building around, not tear it down to turn it into a McDonald's, which I think is another Columbus, Ohio doctor converted restaurant, but years after, speaking of McDonald's. Right. And I think that's Worcester, Ohio, or Worcester District Hospital. So, you know, that one is, you know, had the whole history on the back page, no mention of ghosts, because it's like, yeah, that's not really appetizing for a lot of folks. Or do you really lean into it where it's not even supposed to be a restaurant? It's like that jail, I think, in South Carolina. They've converted it. So like a pop-up restaurant in the jail, and you can dine in the cells. And I think it was either somebody I saw on one of the ghost shows, or maybe even a listener of ours who wrote in a story, where they're there with their partner, and they're having dinner in one of the cells, and like the knife on the table slowly turns by itself. And that's somebody probably, you know, again, a spirit's like, hey, wasn't this fun? Hope you're having a great date. Watch me turn your silverware, you know, your flatware.
Yeah.
And so that's to let you know I'm here. We're just looking at it or whatever. So that's the other end of the spectrum where you really lean into it. And in this case, I'm fascinated because I think it's kind of like the Buxton Inn, which I visited. Like it's just well known. There's a woman ghost that shows up in people's rooms. I think she was one of the owners, and I think she speaks to you. Like this woman had reported, that's one of the stories on their website, where this woman looks normal, totally real, showed up at like 3 a.m. in this woman's room and asked her how her stay was. And she thought it was like, I think she, you know, just woken up like, I'm good. Thank you. Like, I'll order some extra towels in the morning. And then it's like, why are you here? Because she didn't think ghost. It's just like, how are you work for the hotel? Like, how'd you get my room? And this is not appropriate, but thanks for asking. And it's just one of those things where the Buxton really leans into it. It's like, it's just known for that. And people come whether you like ghosts or not. And, you know, and then I talked to one of the staff there. It's like, oh yeah, this one door will just kind of slam open and shut on its own when you got to. It's also one of those things where there's a main dining room and then a place where you keep the kegs. And anytime you're going through there, he said, yeah, there's something there. You could feel it. And then you'll look back and the door will slam a couple of times on its own. And so this place though is different in that I don't think they kind of, well, I said, there's a legend and a lore, but to your overall point about all this is that I'm not sure what that is, but definitely something's going on.
Well, here's what stays with me about this one. John was 19, overheated, half undressed in a dark storeroom, and something ran a cold line down his back. And 30 years later, he can still tell you exactly where that line started, where it stopped, mm-hmm. and precisely how it felt. That is worth taking seriously as testimony, whatever was behind it. But the legend he was handed has a problem the staff never mentioned. The jealous Genevieve everyone pinned the building on, the woman who supposedly hanged herself in the elevator over her husband and a nurse. Local historians have spent years showing that almost none of it happened. Her name was Jenny. She didn't die in that house. She died in Grand Rapids of ordinary illness in her 80s. All the other stuff didn't happen. So John met something he couldn't explain, and we can't tell you either what brushed his spine in that room. But I put real money on it not being a vengeful ghost named Genevieve or Genevieve or even Gigi. Because by the record, that ghost doesn't exist. John, whatever you met, we hope you don't meet it again. Thank you so much for trusting your story with us and the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
The Astonishing Dead Letter Office is hosted by Scott Philbrick and Faris Burgess and is executive produced by Tess Feifel. The show is edited and mixed by Sarah Voorhees-Wendell at VW Sound. The theme is based on the Astonishing Legends theme by Judson Crane at Founder Music, arranged by Alan Caricia, who composes all the other music in the show. Tommy Beaver Design created the logo. The announcer is John Boland. That's me. Stories are lightly edited for length, content, and readability, but otherwise presented as they're sent to us. We're always looking for more dead letters, so if you have a story of your own you'd like to share, email it to deadletteroffice@astonishinglegends.com. Please include how you would like to be credited. First name only, first name last initial, anonymous, a pseudonym. Let us know. Due to the number of emails coming in, we often cannot respond, but we do read them all. No part of the show may be reproduced anywhere without permission. Copyright Astonishing Legends Productions.
You're listening to this podcast, so we know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact you might not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average.
They make it super simple. Pop over to progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote with coverage options tailored to your choices. Plus, you'll see which discounts you may qualify for, like the online quote discount or savings for paying in full. In fact, 99% of Progressive auto customers earn at least one discount.
See if you could save when you switch to Progressive. You'll feel good about making a savvy choice. Visit progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little extra cash back.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who save with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary.
Hey guys, it's Joe.
It's Kevin.
And this is Nick Jonas from Hey Jonas.
Do you remember growing up when it felt like every teacher had a favorite student?
Everybody knew who it was. Well, I was homeschooled, so I like to think it was me. A class of one. Congratulations.
But we're not here to talk about favorite students. We want to talk about a teacher's real favorite.
Kleenex tissues.
According to TeacherList, Kleenex is the number one facial tissue brand trusted by teachers.
Kleenex Ultra Soft tissues are silky soft to help prevent skin irritation. And now you can take them anywhere with Kleenex Snap and Go.
Between dance, soccer, school events, and everything else kids have going on after school, Kleenex Snap and Go is easy to take along. It fits in backpacks, sports bags, or even in the car, so it's ready for whatever comes next. So do the best thing for your kids and teachers. Stock up on the ultimate classroom favorite. Maybe you'll even become the teacher's favorite parent.
We still haven't settled who would be the favorite in our school.
We haven't settled who the favorite brother is either.
For whatever happens next, grab Kleenex.
I love days like these at the pool, but my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can sometimes take me out of the moment. I'm ready to make a splash with clearer skin thanks to SKYRIZI, risankizumab riza. SKYRIZI is a prescription-only injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. At 4 months, most people saw 90% clearer skin when measured from head to toe, and many were even 100% plaque-free. People also saw significant improvement in psoriasis symptoms of pain, redness, itching, and burning.
Don't use if allergic to SKYRIZI. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
Now there's nothing on my skin, thanks to SKYRIZI, and that means everything. Ask your doctor about SKYRIZI, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis. Visit SKYRIZI.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
This Monday.com ad was created by a team of people and AI agents. Reese, our content agent, wrote the copy based on our best practices, like mentioning Monday.com 3 times. That was the second. Johnny, our coordination agent, built the timeline and kept everyone aligned. Olivia, our human creative director, stayed in the loop because agents are great, but they don't always know when a joke lands. She had one note: tell listeners it only takes minutes to build an agent. So, minutes. Create your own AI agent today on Monday.com.
I love days like these at the pool, but my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can sometimes take me out of the moment. I'm ready to make a splash with clearer skin thanks to SKYRIZI, risankizumab riza. SKYRIZI is a prescription-only injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. At 4 months, most people saw 90% clearer skin when measured from head to toe, and many were even 100% plaque-free. People also saw significant improvement in psoriasis symptoms of pain, redness, itching, and burning.
Don't use if allergic to SKYRIZI. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
Now there's nothing on my skin, thanks to SKYRIZI, and that means everything. Ask your doctor about SKYRIZI, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis. Visit SKYRIZI.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.